before you were the commissioner's chair, Nicole Moretti Ferrer. I always want to call you Reardon. I can't. Gerard Mahoney and Branville Bard. This meeting is being audio taped and videotaped.
Before we get started, I just want to make a couple of announcements. First of all, matter number two has been taken off the agenda as we've received all the information that we needed from them. And then I think that's it in terms of hearings. Also, it's renewal season, so anyone that holds a common victualler, alcohol, entertainment, or used car dealer license, just a reminder that you need to renew. Alcohol renewals need to be done in the month of November per state law, so please make sure you do that. If you have any questions on how to do that, please contact the License Commission. We have appearance notices here. Any attorney that's representing anyone, please fill those out so we know where to send the decision to. If you're interested in how the board votes on a matter and want the decision sent to you, also please fill it out so we know where to send it to. Witnesses, we'd appreciate it if you fill it out so that we know how to spell your names properly on the minutes. Thank you. You can start.
First matter, Disciplinary Coffee Shop, LLC, doing business as Upper West, 1 Cedar Street B, holder of general on-premise all-alcohol license number 11587 for alleged violations of failure to comply with the Massachusetts Comprehensive Fire Safety Code, Section 20.1.5.2.42, General Laws, Chapter 148, Section 28, General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, and Board's Rules 2.2, 2.3, 2.5, 2.6, 5.1, 5.2, and 13.1. Failure and or refusal to cooperate with agents of the fire department or hindering an investigation and or enforcement of the law and violation of General Laws, Chapter 138, Section 23, 63, 63A, and 64. Board's Rules 2.2, 2.3, 2.5, 2.6, 5.1, 5.2, 13.1, 13.3, and 13.5. Threatening, intimidating a witness, to wit public officials, in violation of General Laws, Chapter 268, Section 13B, General Law, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, and Board's Rules 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, 5.2, 13.1, 13.3, and 13.5. Threatening public officials, in violation of General Laws, Chapter 275, Sections 2 through 4, General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, and Board's Rules 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, 5.2, 13.1, 13.3, and 13.5.
Coffee shop, DBA Upper West, please come up. And anyone testifying on this as well? And if you could all please stay standing up and raise your right hand.
Swift, Officer Zito. Swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please take a seat. Thank you. And good afternoon. If you can please state and spell your names for the record, I'll start over here and then just go around. That'll just be easier.
Officer Benny Zito, S-Z-E-T-O, Police.
Thank you.
Officer Daniel McGinty, M-C, capital Z, I-N-T-Y, Cambridge Police.
Thank you.
Kim Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y.
Thank you.
Xavier Dietrich, X-A-V-I-E-R, D-I-E-T-R-I-C-H.
Thank you.
Deputy Chief Peter Donovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, Cambridge Fire Prevention Office, Cambridge Fire Department.
Thank you.
Captain Philip Arsenault, A-R-S-E-N-A-U-L-T.
Thank you. I guess we'll start with you, Deputy Chief Donovan.
So in the evening, approximately 7:15, the evening of September 29th, myself, Captain Arsenault, Officer McGinty, we did a follow-up inspection from August 3rd of this year for violation of candles at that 1 Cedar Street, the location. Upon arrival, we noticed that the candles were still lit. I introduced myself to the bartender, requested to speak to the manager. Ms. Courtney came over. I advised her that she continued to have the the candle slit, and that they needed to be extinguished. Ms. Courtney immediately became argumentative, aggressive in nature, getting into personal space, asking us to read the code. And every attempt to read the code, she'd interrupt probably a sentence or less into reading the code. We took the conversation to the exterior stairs, continued to be argumentative, continued to disagree with that she believes she's not violating any code. The conversation continued outside. We talked approximately, in all total, probably maybe 40 minutes. Ms. Courtney did not want to shut off the, extinguish the candles. Gave her a verbal cease and desist numerous times. Numerous times we attempted to read the code, being interrupted, coming into our personal space. At one point, pulling the paperwork out of my hand. And we asked her to please not be in violation of our personal space. It came to a point where Sergeant Bates, Officer McGinty's superior, was called. At that point, Sergeant Bates tried to speak with the man, Ms. Courtney and Mr. Dietrich about extinguishing the flames. At that point, we had to, he advised me possibly that in order to get the her to comply, that it could possibly require that we have to shut down the establishment and have her arrested. I told her before that we had to, if she didn't extinguish the candles, we would have to shut the establishment down for the evening and evacuate the building. So Sergeant Bates asked me to make sure that that was the decision that they wanted to go forward with. So I conferred with my assistant chief, and he said continue with the enforcement procedures. So when I was returning to enter the building again, Captain Arsenal, Officer McGinty, and Sergeant Bates were exiting the building. They said that the candles had been extinguished. At that point, Ms. Courtney asked for our business cards or some sort of contact information. The two police officers gave her the contact information. I did not have a business card. I gave her, she was recording the conversation, and I believe she said to me that I will live to regret this.
When you say that she became argumentative and aggressive in nature, what do you mean?
Getting up in our personal space, raised voice, you know, getting close to us, pulling the papers out of my hands at one point, that general type of behavior.
And you said that she told you that you would live to regret this. How did you, what did you take that to mean?
I did not take it as a physical threat. I didn't think she wanted to physically harm me, but there's other forms of intimidation. She was not 100% sure what she was referring to, if she wanted to get me in trouble, do further, you know, she didn't believe that we were enforcing her property. You know, she wanted to get me in trouble somehow with my position.
Captain?
I was called to assist Deputy Chief Donovan in the same way you just read about the violation. It was a follow-up from August. I entered, we met outside, Deputy Chief Donovan and the police officer. Then we entered the building, just like you said, and had the candles lit. Deputy Chief Donovan asked for the manager, Mr. Gordon, came. He handed her the paperwork of the three violations, Chapter 148, and the Code 10.12.2. Told her she was a violation. Those, if she wanted to read them, she could read them, and then I heard that, either with the candles. She said she had trouble reading them, so that's why we went in the hallway, because it was a better light. So we went in the hallway to move the conversation in the hallway, but she kept interrupting Peter Donovan, W. Chief Donovan, when he read Chapter 148, Section 28, and kept saying, where it says, rules not inconsistent therewith, that was a violation of this law, so that law doesn't take precedence, 148, which was the law that said we can go in if we see a dangerous atmosphere, we can shut the place down or put out the handles in the dangerous atmosphere. She kept trying to interrupt Deputy Chief Donovan as he read the other thing. She kept saying, read the document. She kept interrupting him. We decided to move it outside, where the conversation still continued for about 30 minutes. Same thing. Read the documents, challenge the documents, read again. Then she asked everybody to read the section on Section 20.1.5, 0.2.4, and she kept emphasizing about portable cooking equipment. But we kept, so I read it, I went to start reading, and she kept coming to my private space, so that's why I said, could you just give me 2 to 3 feet and let me read it? And then the police officer also told her, could you just stand back and let him read? So I read the whole article, and I emphasized where it said, substantial non-combustible base located to avoid danger of ignition. And I said, we're here for the protection of the citizens, really. You know, you could have a fluffy dress on, could hit the candle, and you go over. That's why we don't have the candles here. She still denied it. At that time, again, about 30 minutes, we decided just, I talked to the officer, and said, let's go down, we're going to shut it down. So I was, me and the officer were the first ones to enter the bar. The music was loud. I talked to the manager, the waitress there, told her to turn down the music. She went to turn down the music. By then, Miss Courtney and Deputy Chief Donovan and Officer Bates was entering the building too. She decided to extinguish the candles. She said it was in protest. She was in violation. We were harassing her, and then she wanted to protest it. So as she extinguished the candles, we told her, okay, we're all set, ready to leave. She said she was a violation. She asked for identification. I gave her a card, one of my cards. Two officers gave their cards. And as the two officers left, me and Deputy Chief Dunn left. And that's where she kind of said, you'll live to regret this. And then that's when we left.
How did you take that to mean? What did you take that to mean?
I took that to mean that we were wrong, that we had no right to enforce this law, and that we would live to regret it as in, that we were wrong, and she, you know, for being wrong, we get in trouble for being wrong, for harassing her.
Captain, have you gone into other businesses in the city of King? Let me start that. How long have you been a captain with the fire department?
I've been a captain with the fire department probably 8 years.
8 years. And is that in the fire prevention unit?
No, I've only been in the fire prevention unit since January 22nd. So this wasn't new to me.
And was this the first time you went into a premises to enforce the no-lit candle?
Yeah, second. I've done a task force two or three times, and I just was learning how to do the task force. So this was, I was there mostly as a witness, as for Deputy Chief Donovan. He was going to enforce the rules, and I was going to be just as a witness and a learning curve for me, too. So I was been learning the progress of how to work in fire prevention.
Okay. And Deputy Chief Donovan, how long have you been with the fire department?
21 years.
How many of those years as deputy chief?
A little over four.
And how many in the fire prevention unit?
A little over four. I was assigned when I was promoted deputy chief to the fire prevention bureau.
And as deputy chief, have you had occasion to go into other businesses?
Yes.
And have you had occasion to observe lit candles in other businesses?
I have.
And what have you done?
I've requested either management or ownership to extinguish the candles, and they have every single time extinguished the candles. I've never had an instance where someone did not extinguish the candles upon our request.
And were any of those requests before the requests you made to Upper West?
Yes. Yes. This has been, no candles policy has been, as long as I've been employed at the fire department before, and a long time before that, it's consistent. We deal with every business the same way, and candles are not allowed.
And Captain, you mentioned said she kept coming into your private space and that you asked 2 to 3 feet. Am I to understand that she was closer to you than
she was? Supposed about this, like, kept coming up like that, about this close to me. So I just wanted more space so I could read the document, because she wanted me to read it, but she kept interrupting while I was reading it. So I didn't understand why she wanted me to read if she was going to interrupt me all the time.
Thank you. Officer?
I was working 11 hours that night, and I was sent to Upper West Wine Bar to assist Cambridge Fire with the enforcement issue, and I met with Deputy Chief Donovan and Captain Arsenal, and they informed me that they were there to inspect the establishment to see if the bar was using candles in violation of the open-air fireworks regulations. They had been there, I believe one of them had been there the previous month, and they had the candles, and they were told that they could not use the candles, and they were there tonight to make sure that the candles were not in use. And I was informed that if the candles were in use, they were going to ask them to put them out. And if they refused to put them out, that they would be closing the establishment down for the night. So we went into the bar. We asked for the manager. Ms. Courtney and Mr. Dietrich came out to speak with us. They took their phones out and recorded the whole interaction right away. And it was pretty clear that Ms. Courtney was not going to comply with putting the candles out. And at that point, I informed my supervisor just to get him down there in case we had to close the place down, because we might need more help for that. My supervisor, Sergeant Bates, came down, and we continued to talk to them. We probably were talking to them for about 40 minutes, trying to get them to understand, and I believe it was they kept on reading the violation to her, and she kept interrupting them. She did take the paperwork out of their hands. She kept on asking for an explanation. There's something about the wording. And she, multiple times, she did interrupt them, and she didn't let them continue to read or explain themselves. And it got to the point where they were very patient with her, and the whole interaction was at least 40 minutes long. And they informed her that they were going to go in and shut the establishment down. We went in there, and I think at the last, right before, like Captain Arsenal said, I think we had them turn down the music, and at that point, Ms. Dietrich came in, and she decided to blow out the candles under protest. Then we went back outside, and she asked for our names, bad numbers, cards, and we exchanged information with her.
Okay, and when you say Ms. Dietrich, you mean Ms. Courtney?
I'm sorry. Ms. Courtney,
okay,
yes.
Thank you. Do you have questions for Ms. Courtney?
Deputy Chief,
yes.
So in August, it was the same violation? It was for candles, or was it was a different?
August, we originally went there on a task force investigation. We were investigating a complaint about the tent that we received in the rear of the property. And the location of a propane tank barbecue within 10 feet of the tent. Upon arrival, we saw that that was 10 feet away from the tent. We continued to do a task force inspection of the property, and upon entering the property, that's when we saw the candles lit, and immediately asked to speak to the, identified ourselves and asked to speak to the manager.
And what was the result of your conversation about the candles in August?
Ms. Courtney refused to extinguish the candles. Same type of thing. She told me I was wrong, that we were bullying businesses in the city, that we were picking on her establishment. She continued to argue and talk about that she needed to have her due process and had to have municipal hearing on it. I told her, I gave her a verbal cease and desist to blow them out. Constitutes a verbal cease and desist. I told her to blow them out, and she refused to blow them out. So at that point, I did not have any police presence. So at that time, I told Ms. Courtney that I would send her follow-up information about the code, and that she's not allowed to have the candles. I exited the establishment. The candles were still lit. And we sent her a letter the following business week.
Thank you.
So August 3rd was the task force inspection as a result of the tent complaint?
Correct.
Okay, and the follow-up inspection, which was discussed here previously, was September 29th. On August 3rd and or on September 29th, did you provide written copies of the applicable codes and regulations to either Ms. Courtney or Mr. Dietrich?
On August 3rd, she told me that the website stated, I asked her to view the website. I viewed the website with her. She did not agree with the code. On September 29th, she was giving Mass General Law. I mean, we had Mass General Law, Chapter 148, Section 28. We had Massachusetts Comprehensive Fire Code 10.10.2. And the other code, pardon me, was 20.1.5.2.4. She pulled them out of my hands at one point. We asked to continue to read them over and over again. Ms. Courtney sent me an email, I believe, I'm not 100% sure, either that night or the next day, that she wanted documentation, and I emailed them to her.
That night, meaning the task force night or the September?
The 29th night.
Okay. And then you mentioned...
It could have been the next day. It was in that time frame, that weekend.
And then you mentioned, in response to Commissioner Bard's question, that you sent her a letter after the August 3rd incident.
Correct.
Did that letter include the citations to the laws?
Yes, it gave her... It referred to... 20.1.5.2.4. It was a cease and desist to. I have a copy of it. One second. I can read it if you'd like.
Yeah, I think we have it. This is the one that's dated August 6, 2018.
Correct.
Ms. Courtney or Mr. Dietrich, do you have any questions for
yes.
the...
Yes, we do. One moment.
Okay.
Deputy Chief Donovan, you understand that you're under oath today, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You stated that on August 3rd, 2018, you issued us a violation for candles?
No, I did not. I said that I gave you a verbal that you had to extinguish the candles.
I believe you stated that you told us that we were in violation for using candles.
I said that the candles were not allowed under Massachusetts Comprehensive Safety Code, correct?
So why on the inspection report from that date did you indicate that there were no hazardous conditions and that there were no violations?
I did not indicate there was... you're referring to the question that says, is housekeeping handled to avoid hazardous conditions? Housekeeping refers to storage of materials. It has nothing to do with open flames of candles.
So if you found a hazardous condition, why wouldn't you have listed that as a violation on this report?
I did.
There's
open
no
flame
votive
candles on premise.
You did not list that as a violation. It was under the comments, and you said you were going to provide...
Well, that is a worksheet. It's not a violation sheet. It's a worksheet.
So you're telling me that... Can I answer for a second? Are you referring to the document that says Peter Donovan at the bottom, Upper
yep.
West, 8-3-2018?
Correct.
The okay. August 3rd inspection report from
okay.
the task force.
Okay, thank you.
It's a field inspection report, correct?
I'm just confused why, if you felt there was a violation of the law for the use of candles on August 3rd, why you did not state that there was a violation. You gave us a clean report.
No, I did
on
not.
August 3rd, and you left without extinguishing the candles.
That's because you refused to extinguish the candles at that point. I wanted to make sure that we had, you were given due process, and it was proper that we were correct, and I investigated it, and we sent you a letter the following business week. But I did note it, the open flame, candles on premise. I advised the manager to extinguish the candles. The manager refused to extinguish open flames. The manager advised me that she believed them to be allowed. I advised manager that I will supply supporting documentation that open flame candles are not allowed. That is not a clean report. You're referring to, is housekeeping handled to avoid hazardous conditions? Housekeeping consists of boxes, storage, etc., not open flames.
So, in your opinion, you believe the fire department has no authority to blow out the candles yourselves?
I don't think that's what he testified, and his opinion doesn't really matter here.
I'm
what
asking
matters
him,
is,
you said I could ask him questions, and I'm asking him a question.
Ms. Courtney, move on.
No, it's not fair. You have to let me ask the questions. You ask him questions.
Ms. Courtney, move on.
Guess we can't continue the hearing. If I'm not allowed to ask questions, I mean, I'm
you're allowed to ask questions, but you're allowed to ask questions about facts.
That is a question about facts.
Then ask him about a fact, not his opinion.
Why didn't you blow the candles out yourself on August 3rd?
You refused to blow them out. I did not want to disturb your business. I wanted to make sure that where I was in proper enforcing the code, which I confirmed I was, and that's why we did a follow-up inspection to enforce the code.
You stated that you told me that I would be arrested, correct?
No.
Well, you testified that you told me that
I did not. I testified that Sergeant Bates said that it's a possibility that you would be, that it could come down to that you'd be requested in order to comply with my request. He asked for confirmation from Assistant Chief. He asked me for confirmation that that is how we wanted to proceed. I conferred with my Assistant Chief. My Assistant Chief said, continue with enforcement procedures, and if it came down to you being arrested for, that would have been a possibility.
So are you claiming?
That would be by the Cambridge Police Department.
So are you claiming that you informed me?
No,
I never
informed you that, no.
Okay. You never stated to me or to Mr. Dietrich
no.
that we might be arrested if we didn't blow out the candles?
I never informed you that, no.
You stated that, you claimed that I stated to you, you will live to regret this.
That is what I believe you said to me, yep.
Okay. You believe that that's what I said?
Correct.
Under oath?
Yes.
Okay. The August 6th letter that you discussed with Chair Moratti Ferrer, the August 6th letter that you sent to us regarding the use of candles for cooking equipment.
Okay.
You stated that that letter was a cease and desist letter. Anywhere on that letter does it state cease and desist?
On what date was that?
On the August 6th letter that you discussed with the Chair. The one that attaches the law regarding portable cooking equipment. Does that letter state anywhere therein to cease and desist?
It says that Fire Prevention Bureau has not approved the candles at your location. So if we don't approve the candles at your location, that means they're not allowed to be at your location.
Anywhere in that letter does it state an order to not use candles?
Yes. Yeah.
Where?
It says, please see the attached Massachusetts. Do you want me to read the whole letter?
Sure.
Dear Ms. Courtney, during the August 3rd, 2018 City Manager License Task Force inspection, open flame candles were found to be in use in your establishment. A verbal request to cease and desist was denied. Please see the attached Massachusetts Comprehensive Fire Safety Code section 20.1.5.2.4. The Fire Prevention Bureau has not approved the use of candles for the above noted location. Thank you for your prompt cooperation in this matter. Please feel free to contact me directly should you need anything further.
And what does the attached regulation state?
Candles shall be permitted.
I'm sorry, please read the entire regulation.
I'll read it.
Well, if you're going to start testifying now, that's great. Otherwise, if you're going to be asking him questions, he can testify.
I want him to read the whole thing.
Please read the regulation that you cited to me.
Who's conducting the hearing?
20.1.5.2.4. Portable cooking equipment that is not flue connected shall be permitted only as follows. You want me to read all four?
You can skip down to two if that's the one you're claiming applies.
Two. Candles shall be permitted to be used on tables used for food service where securely supported on substantial non-combustible bases located to avoid danger of ignition of combustible materials and only where approved by the AHJ. That's what I'm referring to in my letter saying that you are not approved by the AHJ to use candles.
On August 3rd and on September 29th, did you or anyone, any of your other agents that report back to you, state that they witnessed anyone at Upper West using portable cooking equipment with candles for cooking at the tables?
I was the only person there. There was no other agents.
I said on both occasions. On August 3rd, the August 3rd visit, as well as the September 29th visit, did you or anyone else that reports back to you state that they witnessed us using portable cooking equipment with candles?
I saw candles. I observed candles on the bar and tables.
Did anyone that reports to you or did you personally witness Upper West using candles at the tables for cooking purposes by customers?
Well, I also informed you of 10.10.2.
I'm sorry, can you answer the first question before we move on?
I observed candles on the table.
Being used with portable cooking equipment.
I'm not 100% sure what they were being used for. When I came in there was lit candles on the table. I couldn't tell you what they were used for.
Deputy Chief, you're under oath. Were we using candles at Upper West for cooking purposes at the tables?
I believe he answered your question. He said he did not know what the candles were being used for.
He doesn't know. He witnessed it. I'm asking what he witnessed.
The question was, did he observe them?
He answered the question twice. You can move on to your next question, Ms.
He did not answer the question because he did not observe them being used for cooking.
You can move on to your next question.
Captain Arsenault, you understand you're under oath today?
Yeah. Okay. I'm sworn in earlier.
You stated that I stated to you, you will live to regret this?
You didn't refer it to me, you referred it as we were leaving. I don't know if you were referring it to me, Deputy Chief Dunham, but as we were leaving, you said it. I don't know who you were referring it to.
So it is your...
You RP to one of us.
So it is your statement that I stated those words?
Yes.
Captain Arsenault, did you witness anyone at Upper West on any date using candles for portable cooking equipment?
You
gave me the statute that talks about portable cooking equipment, so I think you should know what that means.
And I read Section 2 where it says substantial hazard, and I told you candles on the table were a substantial hazard on the table. It says right now, substantially, something that's not combustible. A condom was combustible, I told you. And then also, if somebody was reaching over, with a woman had a fluffy dress on or something, was reaching over the candles, those candles could catch fire to that dress, which I thought was a fire hazard according to that regulation, where it says candles are not in a substantially non-combustible area. That's what I told you.
Thank you for talking about other topics, but if you could first answer my question, did you witness anyone at Upper West on any date using portable cooking equipment with candles?
No, I did not.
No, okay.
No portable equipment.
Did you witness candles being used on, I'm sorry, were you there on August 3rd? I don't recall.
No.
Okay, so you were only there on September 29th. Did you witness anyone on September 29th,
can you describe the manner in which the candles were being used?
The candles were being used on the tables and on the bar, or I don't know, light or whatever. I don't know what they were being used for. They were being used illegally. All I know is they're being used illegally. I don't know what they were being used for. I can't.
What type of candles were they?
They were candles. I was just going to candles. They were candles.
Were the candles in any sort of container?
The candles were illegal. They were candles. So as I'm concerned, they were candles. We don't justify you can have a 2-foot candle. Candles are illegal, no matter what size.
Well, you stated that it was placed on combustible material, but you're not willing to describe the manner in which the candles were being used.
They were in a glass container, I guess. I'm not positive.
Okay, so they were in a glass container. Is glass combustible material?
Is glass a combustible material?
Correct.
It could crack, yes.
Is glass a combustible?
Cold water could get it, could crack. So it could be a combustible material by being cracked, yes.
By a tea light?
Could be cracked if ice hit it from a drink or something. I don't know the facts of that, so I'm going to stick to, I've seen the candles were illegal, and I'm not going to be guessing on if something could get, I don't have that qualification.
May I read 10.10.2, which is another code reference that was...
Can I just finish questioning?
Thank you.
So you stated that the use of the tea lights placed in glass containers on the
Let her finish the question. If you've already answered it, we'll move on.
Sorry.
So you stated that in your opinion it was a substantial hazard. Are tea lights that were placed in glass containers placed on the bars and tables, in your opinion, you stated that was a substantial hazard, is that correct?
In my opinion, yes. Okay. Let's
see. Okay. Officer McGinty?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
So you testified that you were told by the fire officials that we had previously been told that we could not use candles, correct?
Correct.
When you arrived on September 29th?
Correct.
Okay. And did you hear me state you will live to regret this?
I did not hear that. I might have walked ahead of them, so I'm not sure what was said. I wasn't there for everything, but I did not hear that, no.
Deputy Chief, you wanted to clarify something?
Yeah. Let me refer to Section 10.10.2.
Is this also from the Safety Code?
Yeah. Massachusetts this is 10.10.2. The AHJ shall have the authority to prohibit any or all open flames, candles, open recreational and cooking fires or other sources of ignition, or establish special regulations on the use of any form of fire or smoking material where circumstances make such conditions hazardous.
And was this something that you gave Ms. Courtney on September 29th?
This was something that I attempted to read to her. I interrupted with Mass General Law 148.28, also the 20.1.5.2.4. And this was emailed to her, I believe, either the following business week.
Thank you.
Deputy, did you also state previously that on September 29th, while you were attempting to articulate various statutes that apply, that Ms. Courtney attempted to or grabbed the documents out of your hand?
Correct.
How so? Forcibly, or as in, let me read these to limit them for myself, or as in?
I had them in the hand, pulled them out. I'm not sure what the intention was, but they pulled out of my hand.
Okay.
Chair, may I?
This, I'm sorry. This inspection report dated 8-3. The heading says items to be corrected by, and then the comments that you read them before, open, flame, right. Vote of candles on premise. Do you write something in this part if it's not a violation?
It's a worksheet that has certain things that we check off, yes or no, and the comment sections for other things that we observe, which would include the open flames that we want corrected.
Do you take the time to put a non-issue here, something that doesn't need to be corrected? That's what I'm asking.
No, sir.
Courtney, you referenced 527 CMR 10.10.2, the mm-hmm. Mass State Fire Code. Was that included in your letter of August 6th?
No, it was not.
Did I respond to your letter of August 6th?
Yes, you sent me an email, correct.
Did you respond to my email?
Procedure was, it was being handled by the city solicitor's office, so all correspondence would become out of the city solicitor's office.
So I sent you 3 emails after that, making it clear that my understanding was that portable cooking equipment statute did not apply to our business. You failed to respond. You forwarded something to the city solicitor that you have to date still refused to produce.
And I have. What is that you're referring to?
You sent a letter to the city solicitor that has not been produced to me.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
If it's at the city solicitor's office, that's an issue with the city solicitor.
I'm just asking the question. So you sent a letter to the city solicitor.
Well, you're making a statement. I'm not sure what you're referring
to,
please.
I'm asking if you sent a letter in response to my response to you to the city solicitor regarding our use of
that would be attorney-client privilege, Ms. Courtney.
I'm asking him a question.
That would be attorney-client privilege.
Did the city solicitor write back to me in regards to our use of candles?
I have no idea.
So you left us hanging with the knowledge that we weren't using portable cooking equipment.
Ms. Courtney, do you have a question for me?
No, the procedure is in enforcement, is that if it's a legal matter, I notated it, the enforcement. I was giving it to my superiors. My superiors forwarded it to the city solicitor's office. All communication from them would be from their office.
Deputy Donovan, you sent an email to Ms. Courtney dated August 6th. That references the August 3rd inspection, and I would just read the last sentence of the first paragraph. The Fire Prevention Bureau has not approved the use of candles for the above-noted location. Is that correct?
I don't have it in front of me, but I believe, yes.
Thank you.
And that sentence is directly after reference to the statute that is regarding portable cooking equipment, correct?
Well, that it was referring to the letter, that I sent you on that date,
Right, and that's the only statute that was attached to that letter. Was
But that does not mean that the 10.10.2 is the law. I mean, that is a Massachusetts comprehensive fire. That doesn't mean that it's not in existence. It is in existence. It is something that I have to enforce. I am enforcing it, the state code for the city of Cambridge.
So why wouldn't you put in the letter a cease and desist notice or an order to stop using candles if that's your position, that's what that letter states?
Is there a question there? I'm not sure.
Why didn't you put a cease and desist order in the letter?
I believe he already testified that he gave you a verbal cease and desist, which was also referenced in that letter, Ms. Courtney.
I asked him for it in writing, and he sent me the letter, and I'm asking why.
Well, that was afterwards because that is through the... I mean, the matter was referred to the city solicitor's office. I was advised that no more communications would be handled through the city solicitor's office.
I was talking about your August 6th letter.
The letter speaks for itself, Ms. Courtney.
Okay, I just have one more question about 10.10.2.
Okay.
You claim that section gives you the authority to walk into any restaurant at any time and shut them down if they have candles.
No. No, that doesn't specifically say that.
Where do you get that authority?
Chapter 148.5, I believe it is. Want me to read that for you?
Sure.
the marshal or the head of the fire department, any person who the marshal or the head of the fire department may delegate his authority to in writing, may, upon complaint of a person having interest in the building or premises property adjacent thereto, shall at any reasonable hour enter into buildings upon premises, which term for the purpose of the remainder of this section shall include alleys adjacent thereto, within their jurisdictions, and make an investigation as to the existence of conditions likely to cause a fire. They shall, in writing, order such conditions to be remedied. And whenever such officers, persons find in a building or upon premises any accumulation of combustible rubbish, including but not limited to waste paper, rags, cardboard, string, packing material, sawdust, shaving sticks, waste leather, or rubber broken boxes or barrels, any. Would you like me to continue?
I would not like you to continue. I think the statute speaks for itself.
I think it does not. Okay, that's new. That hasn't been cited in anything that's ever been provided to us, and it's also not the subject of today's hearing.
That's Mass General Law, Chapter 148.
We're moving on. So, Ms. Courtney, do you have any other questions for us?
Yes, so back to my question, 10.10.2, which you claim gives you the authority to ban candles.
He has the authority to enforce the laws as they relate to fire.
Are you testifying on behalf
of
the fire department?
No, I'm telling you to move on.
Are you testifying on behalf of the fire
department?
Ms.
Courtney, you will respect this board. I'm telling you to move on.
I'm asking a question about
the
statute.
No, you're not. You're not.
Okay, if that's the way you want to proceed, it's on record.
Fantastic.
That's how you handled it.
Ms. Courtney, move on.
I have a very specific question.
Can we just note for the record that what he just read is not listed?
I noted that for the record.
Okay.
It's already noted.
Okay. You've already said it
it's
for the record.
It's already noted.
Will either of you be offering testimony?
Sure. We deny the allegations stated in the letter from your secretary, Chris O'Neill, on October 12, 2018, and published in the agenda for today's hearing by your executive director, Elizabeth Lint. The allegations are false and defamatory. We did not use candles for cooking by customers at the tables at Upper West.
Okay, I do have a couple of questions for either of you, whoever wants to answer it. This one would be specific to you since it was Ms. Courtney. Or Ms. Courtney and Mr. Dietrich, were you both present on August 3rd during the task force inspection at Upper
August
West?
August 3rd, yes.
And at that time, did Deputy Chief Donovan tell you that candles could not be lit?
Initially, yes. Not when he left.
What do you mean, not when he left?
Well, he stated that candles were not allowed in Cambridge, and I asked him to show me the regulation because I had researched it extensively, and I could find no law, regulation, rule, code, anywhere in the state or local regulations stating that candles were not allowed in Cambridge. I'm an attorney. I was pretty thorough in my search. I told him that. I asked him to show me. He said it's right on the website. I got out my iPad. He pulled up the Cambridge Fire Department website and was unable to show me anything that stated that. Then, as he started to doubt himself, he decided to leave and not pursue the matter, and he said he would find it and email it to me, which is when he emailed me the section regarding portable cooking equipment, which we were not using in that time.
So that was the result of that was the August 6th letter.
That was the result of that was the August 6th
and
letter.
The August 6th letter only mentioned the regulation regarding portable cooking equipment. It did not mention any other regulation.
It also mentioned, you're not contesting, I just want to show you this because I keep referring to this, can you show them that? And that's the August 6th letter. I just want to make sure, I mean, the letter speaks for itself, but.
Thank you.
Is that the letter you received?
Right.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, after this August 6th letter, I know that you mentioned that you sent other emails to Deputy Chief Donovan. which were not responded to. Did you ever receive a response from the city solicitor?
Not to date. Haven't received a response from anyone to date.
On September 29th, the date of the other inspection, were you informed by Deputy Chief Donovan that you could not have the candles lit?
Yes.
Were you asked by him to extinguish the candles?
Yes.
Did you comply?
Yes.
Yes, we did.
When?
After
the first request?
After we had a discussion about the law.
Did the discussion last 30 to 40 minutes?
No.
How long did it last?
Less than 20 minutes.
I'm sorry, you said less than 20
minutes? 20 minutes.
I'm sorry, were you saying less than 20 minutes or 20 minutes?
It's around 20 minutes.
Okay.
In the vicinity.
Officer, you would have reports of when, do you have a report of when you responded to the scene and when you left the scene?
I responded, I think I was dispatched at about 7 p.m. and I wrote that in my report. I probably got there within 5 minutes or so of that. And I believe it was close to 7:45 when we left.
Ms. Courtney or Mr. Dietrich, did either of you invade the personal space of Deputy Chief Donovan?
No.
Did you get close to him?
Yes, and what happened is they brought us printed out statutes and requested that we read them. So when you bring me a piece of paper and you ask me to read it, I'm looking at it numerous times, and we have a video recording of this, numerous times the two of them were reaching over me into my space, pointing at the paper. I have that on the video. So that happened before what he's describing. You know, he just picked a moment where he decided to pretend as if I was stepping into his space just to make a point.
Are you submitting the video?
No.
Why not?
Because you're making criminal allegations against us.
Okay.
Well, I can submit the
not
video.
Not submitting the video.
Well, we have the public records, right?
Yeah, you don't give us our public records, so...
If that's not true, but okay.
Yes, I don't have
Ms.
the letter from
Ms.
Solicitor.
Courtney, I'm not going to get into a fight with
that's
you about this.
Oh, that's a question.
Did you, Ms. Courtney, did you say you will live to regret this?
I did not.
Did you say anything close to that?
I said something like, you're going to regret proceeding in this manner. This is not how this is supposed to be done.
And what did you mean by you're going to regret proceeding in this matter?
That I would appeal whatever decisions they made, and that if they were going to be embarrassed because they were just harassing and intimidating us and our business for, with no legal grounds.
Were you threatening their jobs?
No.
I noticed that you sent us an email around late this afternoon, about an hour before this hearing. I have not finished looking through it, but it looks like an appeal.
Correct.
Can you tell me, and then you tried to give us a copy of that just now as well.
It's been filed with the city clerk.
I understand, I'm not challenging that. I'm asking if you can tell me what the basis of this is so that I know, so that when we're discussing
that's
this
that's regarding
hearing,
the topic of candles, okay. The appeal to the appeals board. Regarding the fire department's handling of the candles topic.
To the fire prevention board of the state?
Great, correct.
And you're appealing basically whether or not you can have candles on the premises?
I'm appealing all of their behaviors. You can read it.
I know I can read it, but you sent it to us a little bit before
okay.
the hearing, so I just want to know what it
I'm
is.
I'm appealing, I'm disputing that candles are not allowed. I'm disputing that they were allowed to issue me verbal orders without a written order, and that I'm disputing that they were able to shut my business down as they began to do and turn my customers away, which they did.
I'm sorry, are you testifying that they told customers to leave?
Correct.
When?
They They asked customers to leave as they were entering the...
I'm sorry, before you continue, when meaning August or September?
September 29th. While we were discussing the law, they blocked customers who had reservations for dinner from entering Upper West and told them they were shutting the business down, and those customers left.
And when you say they, who do you mean?
Customers who had reservations.
I'm sorry, them meaning the city.
I believe it was Officer McGinty, but I'm not positive.
I don't remember which one it was. It was one of the two police officers. I don't remember.
Officer McGinty, did you turn away customers?
I did not, but right before we went in there, when it looked like we were going to have to close the place down, there was a couple that wanted to get in there. I believe Sergeant Bates did tell them, excuse me, we're about to shut this place down. So there was one couple, I believe, that were about to enter, and he did tell them, because it looked like at that point we're going to ask everyone to leave.
Did they enter the premises?
I don't believe they entered the premises.
Okay. And then when we all went inside, my employee was asked to turn off the music?
Yes.
And then you began shutting down the business, asking customers to leave?
No, not at all. Nobody asked him to leave. You came in right after we turned the music down. Before, I believe Sergeant Arsenault was just going to make an announcement. Before he could say anything, I believe you told...
You were preparing to shut the place down.
They were preparing to shut the place down.
Right. You were standing in the middle of the room, and you were all preparing.
We didn't say anything about shutting the place down. You came in at the last second, and you said, under protest, I'm going to blow out the candles. And that was that. We left. Everyone remained. Nobody left. Nobody got up and left. We didn't disrupt the business.
Well, to add to that, actually, we did have a large party that was at a table that did leave because of this. Do you have any other questions?
I just have one question for Officer McGinty. I have a copy of your report, and you indicate, the deputy chief and captain were patient and professional as they asked Courtney multiple times to extinguish the candles. Courtney refused to continue to argue. The deputy chief and captain then entered the bar, preparing to shut the bar down, but Courtney then decided to blow out all the candles under protest. Cambridge Fire and Police then left the premises. Is that, would you say today that that's an accurate representation?
That's accurate, yes.
Thank you very much.
I have one more question, I'm sorry. Deputy Chief Donovan, I believe the report of Officer McGinty stated that he was told by you that you had the backing of City Hall and the city solicitor in shutting our business down. City manager, is it? Yeah, City Hall and city manager was in the police report. Were you the one that stated that to him?
You should show him the police report because he didn't write the police report.
I assume he has the police report in front of him.
Oh, look, hold on. Sorry. The city solicitor's office advised...
That's attorney-client privilege.
Okay.
Okay, did you state to me that you had the authority to shut my business down from the city solicitor's office?
I don't recall that. I know I have the authority to shut your business down through the Massachusetts 527, Chapter 148.
Chapter 148, Section 5, the one you read?
I don't know. I know. I don't have the correct... section, but I'm sure if we have find an imminent danger, we can shut.
It's not in dispute whether the fire department has the authority to shut down a business.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It is under dispute. If we dispute it, it's under dispute.
It's not under dispute.
It is under dispute.
Thank you. Do you have any other questions?
Yes. Deputy Chief Donovan, has the fire department ever issued...
Hold on one second. Massachusetts General Law 527, 1.7.8, imminent danger conditions. Well, conditions exist and are deemed to be an imminent danger by the HDA. The AHA will have the authority to abate or require abatement of such conditions that are in violation of this code. It was a hazardous condition, and we were going to evacuate the building to avoid the potential hazard, not only to the customers, but to the community.
So if it was an imminent danger for Upper West to use candles, then why did you wait months before asking us to not use them?
I told you I was making sure that we were proper in our code enforcement. I wanted to be fair to you and your business, just like any other business in the city. Once I confirmed that that was the situation, we enforced the code.
So you think it's proper and fair to come into my business on Saturday night during busy dinner service and threaten to shut our business down as opposed to sending us a cease and desist notice?
It's argumentative. Continue, Ms. Courtney.
Why did you not send us a cease and desist notice?
And Ms. Courtney, he's already answered that, and he's already said that he gave you a cease and desist.
Okay. So if it was... have you ever issued a permit to anyone for candles?
Not that I recall, no.
So you claim that a permit is required to use candles, and I've personally witnessed many restaurants and bars in Cambridge.
No, I believe I say a condition of allowing permits, candles. In some instances, it requires a paid fire detail as a condition of allowing open flame in an auditorium.
So now there's a paid fire detail required to have candles, not a permit.
Ms. Courtney, I think what
permission.
Yeah, go ahead.
Essentially, as you said earlier, that permission is required.
Has permission ever been granted?
To what?
To anyone ever for using a candle in Cambridge.
With the condition of a paid fire detail, correct?
I made a public records request to the city, and they could not produce any from 2016 to present.
Take your issue with the city's records officer.
No, they responded.
Okay.
So there are no records.
So then that's your response, or no records responsive to that request. He cannot speak to what the city provided you, Ms. Courtney. He's not the keeper of records.
He's the creator of the records.
Not Ms. Courtney. Move on.
Okay, he said he never issued a permit.
Do you have anything else to testify to? Heather, do you have any other questions?
I don't. Can you speak to the record?
What is that?
179.
Which one is that one? Oh, the comprehensive fire code 179. I think that's encompassed in the authority there. Okay. Anything else?
Deputy, I have one question. I just want to clarify. You stated earlier you've done numerous task force inspections in your role as a deputy chief in the fire prevention office, and on occasion you have come across places of public assembly that are using candles, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you've asked them to extinguish the candles or instructed them to do so, is that correct?
Yes, sir, I have. I can even give you a copy of the field report of recent cases.
And I think you said every time you asked somebody to comply with that request, they did so, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Deputy Chief Donovan, was Ms. Courtney or Mr. Dietrich cooperative on September 29th?
Not at all.
Captain Arsenal, were Mr. Dietrich or Ms. Courtney cooperative at all on September
29th? Not at all.
Officer McGinty, were Ms. Courtney or Mr. Dietrich cooperative on September
29th? No.
Can I ask my follow-up question to his question?
Yes, you may. I'm sorry, I think
okay.
She was going to ask
yeah,
you.
I was just
one.
Trying to remember what he just asked him. I'm sorry. What was the question that you just asked him?
I asked him if he's conducted task force inspections, and any time he's come across candles,
were
they extinguished, and he said yes.
Right, okay. So then my question is, are candles currently illegal in Cambridge, in all of Cambridge, for anyone?
Candles are not allowed in restaurants, assemblies. You can use a candle in your personal home. You can use a religious candle. You can use candles in multiple. What we're talking in an assembly, restaurants, has to do with anyone that has any bar, auditorium. But other than that, if you have a candle in your home, candle in any other establishment like a religious establishment, that they are allowed.
So, what regulation states that?
I think this has already been 10.2. This has already been asked and answered.
10.10.2 does not say that.
This has already been
does not say that churches can have candles.
No, it says we have the authority to prohibit them, and we prohibit them in those locations. I'm enforcing
them. Where is the prohibition? Where is the regulation that prohibits them?
10.10.2.
No, that gives you the authority to do that.
Ms. Courtney.
No, this is important. That gives you the authority to do it, so you're claiming that you've done it. So where is that statement?
10.10.2.
Not the statement that says that. Where it says you have the authority to do it.
Are you asking if there is a written rule by the fire department?
Yes.
On this issue, do you know if there's a written rule by the fire department that specifically says that candles are not permitted in restaurants?
Is it on our website? It's referred to. Also, we're enforcing Massachusetts Comprehensive Safety Code,
and we're on the website.
And when I'm sorry, Mr. Dietrich, I'm speaking now, please. And on August 3rd, did you tell them that pursuant to the Cambridge Fire Department,
yes,
they could not have the candles?
Correct.
And did you repeat that on your communications with Ms. Courtney in writing?
Correct.
And did you repeat that on September 29th?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
No, but here's the one that says on the website.
Are you saying that there's a regulation somewhere that says candles are not allowed to be used in restaurants in Cambridge?
Does it specifically say that? No.
Okay. Doesn't specifically say that.
So, the fire department recently posted on their website the following statement. The Cambridge Fire Department does not allow the use of candles unless approved by the Fire Prevention Bureau.
And then it states 10.10.2. That's, I mean, if we're going to read it, we'd read the whole section.
So that sentence doesn't say anything about religious usage of candles.
Again, this has nothing
or
to do. This
no,
is nothing.
No, this sentence means that candles are not allowed anywhere in Cambridge. But it's a sentence
has nothing to do with
posted
the
by an
state.
IT person on a website after their visit to our establishment to try and cover up the fact that they had no authority. To
there was a web page that was created after the visit that says Cambridge Fire Department does not allow use of candles unless approved by the Fire Prevention Bureau. It makes no statement about restaurants, bars, churches, places of worship, or anything. It just says candles are not allowed for use in Cambridge, and I would like to note that that was put up on the website after the visit.
Do you do the website for the fire department?
Do I personally do it? No.
Then he cannot answer the question. Do you have any other questions?
Were you involved in the posting of that sentence?
You informed us in one of the visits that as you said, August 3rd, we brought up the website. You informed me that you believe that the addition to be out incorrect, so the correct addition was notated, and the correct information was notated. Just in order to have correct and have make sure.
Are you talking about the fact that you had an outdated law posted on your website from 2015?
Again, are you not?
We're talking.
No, I'm
about
asking. That's what he's talking about. I'm trying to clarify for the people that are listening that have no idea what he's talking about.
The point is that a statute ordinance existed prior to the visit, and they had the fire department.
There is no ordinance or statute that.
There is.
It doesn't ban candles.
Comprehensive Fire Prevention Regulation in Chapter 148, Massachusetts Fire Prevention Laws,
allows candles in all of Massachusetts.
Not in place as a public assembly.
Yes, it does.
If the authority having jurisdiction says no, it's no.
That's not correct. It gives you the right to make a regulation. No such regulation has been created. Okay. It's very straightforward.
It looks like
you tried to make a regulation here on the website without any public process.
Can one of you speak at a time? And that's your position.
She wants to keep an accurate record.
I'm sure she does.
And that's your position. And you've testified to it. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I would like to ask another question. That webpage that we're talking about, the one that says the Cambridge Fire Department does not allow the use of candles unless approved by the Fire Prevention Bureau, was that posted on the website prior to the visit to Upper West?
On September 29th.
September 29th.
I think he's already testified that he doesn't control the website. He cannot answer as to when the website's created if he's not the one creating it. Do you have anything else?
If it was his directive to do it, he can.
Do you have anything else?
I disagree.
So with that said, testimony is closed. Are you gentlemen ready to vote on this matter? Ready to vote on the matter?
I think so.
Okay.
Okay, now, just one more thing. It's 1.7.16 is where it says, the AHD is hereby authorized and empowered to take such actions as may be necessary to abate such dangerous, unsafe conditions, including evacuation of buildings.
Okay. With regard to this matter, I would take 2 to 4, as listed on the hearing notice, as sort of the same, or together as one. I find a violation on 2 to 4. Oh, sorry. It's just I'm reading it off of this. Okay. So in terms of the way that it was noted, they're listed as, they're numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, and 4. 2, 3, and 4 I find a violation for. With regard to 1, I find a violation, but I would hold off on issuing anything on this, considering the fact that an appeal has been filed, and I would defer my vote on 1 until that appeal is resolved. That would just be me. I'm not quite sure how the two of you feel about that, but in terms of 2 to 4, I find a violation on that, and I would issue a suspension.
I would concur with that, and I would concur with the hold on 1 pending the appeal of the Board of Fire Prevention Regulations.
I'll concur.
Okay. Now, with regard to this licensee, they do not have a disciplinary record. They have been in operation since 2016. But I would suggest the suspension based on the fact that this is such an egregious type of violation in terms of failure to cooperate and the threats made to public officials during the enforcement or during their executing their official duties. So I would suggest a violation. I would suggest a 3-day suspension.
3 days?
Yeah.
Okay,
so violation for 2 to 4 with 3-day suspension, collectively, not for each, and then a stay and defer our vote on 1 pending the appeal.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, we'll take a quick break. The board will take a brief recess. I think you should stop touching
that. All right, it's on. It's on.
Yeah.
back on the record at
4:23. Thank you. Bowery, Cambridge, LLC, Sinclair.
And this is to amend your existing entertainment license to include 3 pinball machines and trivia. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your name for the record?
Joshua Bhatti, last name Bhatti. Paul McMenamin, McMenamin.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, this was sort of a miscommunication. This was meant to go on the admin agenda.
Gotcha.
No problem. But I do see that there were no issues in terms of zoning or anything. You're just adding to your current entertainment, which has a whole bunch of other stuff, correct?
Correct.
And then I see that we got the map of where they are. Anyone in favor of this petition? If you are, you have to speak for the record. And for the record, that was Attorney James Rafferty. Anyone else in support of this petition? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay. I would vote to grant.
Concur.
Granted. And then I know that we got the alcohol renewal. We haven't gotten the entertainment renewal.
Yeah, I think it had to be reset in the system and sent to my account. So
okay.
I was in touch with Chris
about
that.
Do you know?
No, because
okay.
I mean, it still hadn't popped up in the...
When was the last time you tried?
Yesterday morning.
And it hadn't worked?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll look into that because then we have to escalate it to the vendor.
Gotcha.
Okay, and then I'll shoot you an email.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Application, JH Restaurant Cambridge LLC, doing business as John Harvard's Brew House, 33 Dunster Street, holder of license number 11649, application 24207 for change of beneficial interest and transfer, issuance of stock.
Which one are you doing?
John Harvard's.
Well, you skipped one. Anyways.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Anyways, we called John Harvard's. John Harvard's here. You got lucky. No? Second call. All right, going back to the one that
sorry
we heard
about that.
50 Binney Street LLC, DBA Lily P. said 50 Binney Street has applied for a new common victualer all alcohol license. Proposed hours 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. Monday through Wednesday, 11 to 2 a.m. Thursday to Friday, and 10 to 2 Saturday with seating, 176 inside, 246 total occupancy, and 54 patio seats on private property. Christopher Parsons is proposed manager of record of a premise described as approximately 500 square feet ground floor restaurant containing kitchen, 2 dining rooms, and 2 bars. Entrance located along Binney Street, patio seating on private property, also applying for an entertainment license to include music above conversation level, dancing by patrons, live music, DJ, karaoke, 6 TVs, and 2 video games. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is James Rafferty. I'm an attorney with offices at 907 Mass Ave as of this week, Cambridge, 02139. Sitting to my immediate right is Alex Tannenbaum, T-A-N-N-E-N-B-A-U-M. Seated to Mr. Tannenbaum's right is Christopher Parsons, P-A-R-S-O-N-S. And to Mr. Parsons' right is Brian Lessa, L-E-S-S-E-R.
Thank you. Okay. Counselor, do you want to start by telling us the public need and the concept? And
sure. I was going to note the location. The location is in a recently constructed building that was part of the Binney Street redevelopment that was approved first by the City Council in a rezoning in 2011 and ultimately by the Planning Board 2 years later for a series of 7 buildings along the strip. There's a requirement in the zoning in this location for active uses. The Binney Street corridor has been improved thanks largely to 9 buildings constructed by Alexandria Real Estate that includes housing, over 300 units of housing on this block, including office and laboratory buildings. So the population is expanding in the area. The public need is present. We have been urged by the planning staff and others to find an active use in this location. The building was specifically designed to have a high level of transparency along a curve that will be fronting onto a park, triangular park, where First Street and Land Boulevard come together. So all the planning documents anticipated a restaurant in this location. Alexandria reviewed the opportunity with a number of providers. They were impressed with the program put together by these gentlemen. The commission may recognize 2 of these gentlemen, both Mr. Tannenbaum and Mr. Lesser, licensees on a variety of establishments. Mr. Tannenbaum and Lesser share an interest in Loco.
Naco Taco.
Naco Taco. I apologize.
They're close.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I have. So they, just down the street here on Mass Ave, Mr. Lesser, as the commission knows, there's Waypoint, there's Alden and Hollow, there's Smoke Shack, and
Smoke Shop.
And you have one other. Don't you have four?
No.
Yeah. Naco Taco. Anyway, so this is an exciting full-service restaurant. It's going to be known as Lily Pease. And Lily Pease is the daughter of the guy who's going to do all the work in this deal, and that's Mr. Parsons. He's a restaurant operator. He's had a number of successes.
I'm sorry, your daughter's name is Lily P?
Lily Parsons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's
okay,
Lily
I got
P.
it.
Got it. Okay.
Thank you.
That's cute. Yeah. I like that.
Go ahead. Sorry, counselor.
Yeah. He's got a son named Naco. So, Mr. Parsons, you may be familiar with some of his. He has former owner, active operator of the Ryan Steel in Milton. Milton's attempt to go urban a few years ago, and they put this really hip place in. Mr. Lesser really knows the food business, and he's always coming up with creative ideas. This is going to be an American-based menu with a heavy emphasis on chicken, particularly fried chicken. I'm told there are three types of fried chicken, including North Carolina fried chicken, crispy fried chicken, and what's the third fried chicken?
Cracked black pepper and honey?
Yeah.
So the American Heart Association will not be hosting any seminars here, but we do think that it will definitely prove to be a popular location. It's a wide expanse on the ground floor of this building. It's a big, big building, and as I said, there's a number of fast casual restaurants. This will be the first full service on that strip on Binney Street. So we believe that the demand is there, that the support exists for the use, and particularly for the food product. Lunch, dinner, late night eating. As you know, the biotech and high-tech community that surrounds and occupies these buildings work extended hours. They often have timelines based in West Coast time, Asian time, so the kitchen will be staying open late. It will be very much a full-service restaurant, but I want to bring to the board's attention, there is an attempt to also add some entertainment here, which doesn't exist in many locations in this stretch of Kendall Square. So we have submitted an alternative floor plan that would accommodate the dancing by patrons, and it says two tables would be removed to allow for a bit of a dance floor, a place where a DJ.
This is where we get to 246 for the total occupancy, or do you have a separate? I didn't see another plan.
There's a plan. You don't have the second plan that says performance area?
I didn't see it. I could have meant it, but I didn't see it.
Okay. So it can be achieved by moving out two tables, two four-top tables in the straight planner there. I don't know if you have this straight plan.
So where would the DJ go here? Is there going to be like a DJ area that you always have, sort of like in, no,
it won't
just
be,
he'll,
no,
he or she will come in and out and
set up and break down.
Okay.
That would be towards the top right of your plan, I think.
Okay. And then the TVs, where are the TVs? How about I give this back to you, and because I see where the performance area and the speakers are. Can you designate there where the six TVs would be and the two video games, the pinball machines? That way we can make that part of the record as well. Thank you. And then when you say late night eating, you mean past 11 p.m.?
For most nights, I think we're planning.
There is a private patio that's depicted on the plan. It's on private property.
I did see that. Yeah. Is there going to be entertainment in the patio as well?
I don't think we were planning on that.
Okay.
Just, you know, designated area inside.
Outside speakers with background music in the patio area?
Background music, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, playing the same one.
Okay. And Mr. Parsons, you've been a manager before and have had no disciplinary issues with the local board or the EBCC, is that correct?
That's correct.
And are you, and do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations of this board, the EBCC, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with regard to the service of alcohol?
Yes.
And are you 21 proof or TIPS certified?
I'm not.
Okay. So you would need, if we approve this application today, you'd need to get your certification prior to the license being issued and submit that to the board.
There's an extensive build-out here, so we're probably a few months from, so ample time for them to get trained.
That was my next question. This isn't completely built out, so this could change a little bit at some point? Or this
we'd like
sort
it
of
not to be.
Yeah.
And the bulk of the... The bulk of the contributions by the landlords?
It's largely landlord-funded build-out, which has been the case that Alexandria pursued with Catalyst and a few other restaurants they have in their buildings.
And no percentage rent?
None.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm being corrected on the percentage rent response.
Is it a yes?
Yes.
Okay. I think I saw a no, which is why I was surprised. Give me a second. Let me just double check that. Oops, it says yes. All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
You know, I think the ABCC, as you know, has changed its requirements on disclosures.
Yeah, they've changed their requirements, but yeah.
I said no because it became such a headache that people... It didn't become worth it. But.
Okay.
We also submitted Mr. Parton, who's got an extensive resume in the food service and hospitality industry, including awards from a variety of media sources.
Yep. All right. Any questions? Anyone in favor of this petition? I will note for the record that we received a letter from Councillor Toomey in support of this petition. Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay. I would vote to grant.
Thank you.
Granted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Disciplinary matter. Hold on a second. Oh, no, it's not here. Okay. Disciplinary matter, Hoppy LLC, doing business as the Boathouse, 49.
No, you missed. Oh, yeah, John Harvard's here. Yeah. Sorry, they're not here. Go ahead. Sorry.
49 Mount Auburn Street, holder of common victualler, all alcohol license number 11371. Alleged violation of permitting disorder, disturbance, or illegality on a licensed premise, overcapacity on October 20th, 2018. Violation of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64. Rules and regulations of the Board of License Commissioners, 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, and 5.9.
Swear, ma'am.
Raise your right hand. Anyone who's going to do you swear? Testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
It's Brendan Hopkins, H-O-P-K-I-N-S.
Thank you.
Tyler Bubenik, B-U-B-E-N-I-K, licensing investigator.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Bubenik.
A routine patrol, October 20th at about 10 p.m. I did a count of the capacity inside the boathouse. I counted 48. Maximum capacity for the boathouse is 39.
Okay. Was there any particular event happening that night that you know
of? This weekend, October 19th and 20th, was the head of the Charles Regatta, so I was focusing my efforts on Harvard Square for that reason.
Sorry, you said maximum capacity. You said the count was what?
The count was 48. Maximum capacity for the boathouse is 39.
Okay, gotcha.
Mr. Hopkins?
I was working that night. And, both myself and my brother were there, and our GM, because we knew it was going to be a busy weekend. Lawrence is at the boathouse for most of the day. But around 9 o'clock, it was pretty tame, so he left. I stuck around. I was bouncing back and forth. I told the bartenders, if it seems to be getting crowded, just give me a call and I'll pop over. Then Elena, one of the waitresses, came out. I was actually outside at Dedalus talking to Donnie, one of the doormen. She told me Tyler was next door, he was doing a count. I went over, Tyler informed me, you're nine over. He said, you need to get nine people out of here. So I looked around the room. I noticed there was five ladies at the corner of the bar, and I took a picture of the bar just to show you where they were. And there was, so five ladies were there. I went over, I told them the situation. They were paying their check. They were fine. Meanwhile, there was four women behind them. They were waiting for a seat. So I told them, unfortunately, you don't have to leave the building. They're a little upset by that, but I tried to explain to them the capacity issue. They had a look around the room. The room wasn't that packed, because the 39 people that we had in there, that's pretty much all for seating. So I had one empty table, and then when they left, then that whole area cleared up. So then Tyler and myself went next door to do a count at Dedalus. Then I came back, and then I stayed at the door. I know I was nine over, but at the end of the day, it wasn't overcrowded or timed exits. People could get the exit. And what happened then after, while I'm on the door stopping people from coming in, the bar, I can't really tell people where to sit when they come in the restaurant. So if people gather at the bar, I have a picture of the bar area, which is, it's a decent size. So if I have people sitting at the bar and then I have customers waiting for them to leave, you know, there can be at times five or six people in that area. And then at the bar tables too, people hang around there. Usually it sits eight, but sometimes, you know, there'll be 10 there as well. So if I have 10 people in that area and it's not crowded or overpacked, now I have four open tables. So when customers come in and they go, we want to come in and eat, I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't seat you. And they look at the tables and go, well, you've got four empty tables over there. What's going on? And I'm like, enforcing my capacity. So then at the end of that conversation, they're just looking at me like I'm crazy, and they're leaving. And now what's going to happen is they're probably not going to come back if we're constantly doing this. Especially wintertime, nobody's going to be waiting outside when it's raining, when it's cold. So I'm kind of, I understand we got to run a restaurant that's going to be safe for our clientele. But at the end of the day, too, this isn't going to work out for us if I'm going to be constantly telling people I can't come in if I got open tables. So I'm just hoping I could get some standing room or something.
Do you know if your 39 is limited? I have your file, but I don't have your entire file with me. Do you know if your 39 is due to a building code issue at all?
I don't think so. I think years ago there was a pizza joint in there, and the footprint of the pizza shop was the counter came out to pretty much half the room, because they had pizza ovens and other appliances behind the counter. So when we came in, we kind of made the footprint of the restaurant itself bigger, because we knocked down the counter and pushed it back. So yeah. Now there's more floor space in the restaurant and less behind the counter.
I mean, you have a lot of open.
Yeah, I got
a lot of open floor space.
I mean, even
so, your 39 is seats.
39 seats. I've got nothing for standing.
So what I would suggest is go to ISD to request them to review your plan, your floor plan. You may have to submit an architect if yours is not currently stamped by an architect.
Okay.
You may have to get it stamped by the architect,
okay,
which includes also the standing capacity.
Okay.
Once you get that approved by ISD,
okay,
the board can take it under advisement and we can change your license and approve that as well.
Okay, great.
And then that will be resolved.
Okay.
But you have to make sure, it has to go through ISD, because we have to make sure that there isn't a building code issue. There are some places in the city that are limited in capacity because of a building code issue or no sprinklers or stuff like that.
Okay.
So definitely something, if you submit it as a change to existing license form,
okay,
through our website, and you request for the additional seats, all of that will go through the ISD process, and then we can look at this with regard to that.
Okay, right.
Now, in terms of the actual violation, I note that you have been operating for how many years at this location?
6 years.
Yeah. And there have been no issues, so I would suggest a warning.
I concur with that.
Okay. violation warning and just submit that. You can submit it now with your renewal as well, and all of that will okay. proceed together with the renewal. Okay?
Great.
Thank
okay.
you.
All right, guys.
Disciplinary Third Street Associates Incorporated, doing business as Russell House Tavern, 14 JFK Street. Whole group license number 11420, alleged violation of permitting disorder, disturbance, or illegality on a licensed premises, to wit, overcapacity, on October 19th, in violation of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, and Board Rules 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, and 9.
Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record, and Mr. Lee, if you're going to be testifying, if you can stand up and raise your right hand.
Swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Chair. James Rathke, on behalf of the licensee, Patrick Lee, present manager of record.
Thank you.
Simon Bubinick.
Go ahead, Mr. Bubinick.
Again, this was the same weekend of the head of the Charles, so I was patrolling Harvard Square. This would be October 19th at approximately 9 p.m. I did a count on the outdoor patio of the Russell House Tavern. Counted 23. The capacity for the patio is 18.
Thank you. Counselor?
No questions. But I did want to share with the board a visual so you could get an understanding of the patio. We have no reason to doubt the accuracy of the count. It appears there were five people over. All of the people at those tables were seated. If you notice, the tables go alongside a bench. So it was a busy night, and apparently there were some additional people seated on the bench. Fact of the matter is the patio was within inches of the sidewalk. It's also the patio was the principal entry into the restaurant. It's a courtyard. None of the patrons would say, without having to go through questioning, none of the patrons, I stand to be corrected, were standing. There was no blocking the entrance way or the exit way. I think the risk to public safety was very non-existent. The violation or the capacity issue is present, and we understand the commission's desire to see compliance with plans as approved. I would like to suggest that in this instance, the harm that was affected was not a result of a lack of consciousness to issues that are principally at the heart of capacity issues. It was just an attempt to accommodate visitors to Harvard Square on a busy weekend in a location that didn't impede the safe operation of the restaurant.
Thank you. Mr. Bubinick, were any of the patrons standing?
No, they were seated.
This restaurant has been in operation since 2009, is that correct?
Correct.
With no violations?
Correct.
Okay. Based on this, I would vote a violation warning.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
Chizumba LLC, doing business as Felipe's Taqueria, 21 Brattle Street, license number 11516, alleged violation of overcapacity on October 19th, violation of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, Board Rules 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, and 9. Swear the testimony you're up. Raise your hand. Swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Attorney Kevin Crane, C-R-A-N-E. I represent the licensee.
Thank you.
Tom Brush, B-R-U-S-H, and I am one of the owners of Felipe's.
Thank you.
Tyler Bubinick.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Bubinick.
Again, this is the weekend of the regatta. October 19th, 8:30 p.m., I did a count on the second floor of Felipe's, which if you know the restaurant at all, there's a first floor that's large, it's got a bar in it, then there's kind of like a loft space, there's tables up there, and then stairs from there lead to the roof. This would be that second floor. I did a count and found 60 people. Capacity for that second floor is 48.
I know that was a pretty miserable weekend, but were there any people on the roof?
There were. It was under capacity.
Okay. Do you know, could you estimate, like a handful or were
50 or less.
And about on the first floor?
I'd say about 80. 80 to 100.
Counselor?
Mr. Bubinek?
I want to get the name right.
You got it.
Okay. When you did your investigation this night, were you alone?
I was.
Okay. And what is the capacity overall for the entire premises?
Over the top, off the top of my head, I don't know what it is overall. I use a database we have called Viewpoint in the City, so I can pull up the license for each establishment as I'm investigating them. But if I were to guess, I think it's around 100 for the roof. I have 48 for the second floor, and I think it's around 120 for the first floor, off the top of my head.
You don't have to guess. We have it right here. 62 seats on the first floor and 60 standing on the first floor, 48 seats on the mezzanine, which is the second floor, 60 seats on the roof and 38 standing on the roof, and 12 seasonal patios, 12 seasonal seats on the patio outside on the public sidewalk.
No standing on the walk area?
There is no standing on the second room, on the second floor, I'm sorry, no.
Hey,
and that was after a request from the licensee for changes and after a significant back and forth with ISD and changes of plans and stuff.
Yes.
It was approved in 2017.
So the on the night in question, the overall capacity was being complied with. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, on the night in question, did you have any interaction with any of the employees of the licensee?
I did.
Okay. Who did you speak to, if you know?
Right behind me here. I believe you're a manager.
Yes. The record can show that it's Robert Brush,
okay.
B-R-U-S-H, who's the son of Thomas Brush.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where did you speak with him?
I think we spoke on the second floor.
Correct.
Yeah.
And what did you say to him?
I said, I just did a count. Your capacity is 48. I counted 60, so some of these people are going to have to leave the second floor.
Okay, and what did he do?
He began to move people off of the second floor. There were some people, I can't say for sure, but I think they were congregated waiting to be led up to the roof, so there were people standing, they weren't sitting at a table eating, so those people were moved to other floor first.
Okay, do you know if those people might have been coming down from the roof?
I don't.
Okay. How long did it take for the employee of the licensee to disperse 12 additional people?
Less than 5 minutes.
Okay. At any time you were there that night, were the exits clear?
I noticed them to be clear. I found no violations with the exits.
Okay. And on that evening, did the employees, the licensee, cooperate with you?
Yes.
Okay. And did you go back the next night to the premises?
I did.
Okay. And what did you find that night, if anything?
I found that they were all under capacity. Each floor was under capacity.
Okay. I have no other questions of the investigator.
Thank you. Anything else?
Can I ask Mr. Brush?
Yeah.
Mr. Brush, were you on the location on October 19th?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And could you explain to the board what the system for overseeing the capacity regulations was on that night?
So this goes back to last year when we had a previous manager.
Mm-hmm.
We now have security in there on every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, both at the front door and up on the mezzanine, especially when the roof deck is open. On this particular night, the weather was good. We had a gentleman, Yashar Kalio, on duty. He's been a security for us on the roof for probably about 4 months. And on this particular night, he both controls the number of people on the roof as well as the people on the mezzanine. He's right on the mezzanine, so he's right in front of this group of people. And on this particular night, asleep at the wheel, wasn't looking. It only takes minutes for a crowd to assemble out there, but he failed to take immediate action when he noticed this group standing. We only have 43 seats on the mezzanine, so you can't seat more than 43 people, which allowed some standing, but they're just, in this particular case, there were too many. And as a result of this violation, he was immediately terminated this night. He no longer works for us. But it was a complete dereliction of duty in this particular case.
Okay, now, Mr. Brush, could you describe briefly for the board how patrons move throughout the three-tiered right. premises?
So Felipe's is interesting. So we have a food line. You walk in and you get your food. From that point, you can stay on the first floor. You can take your food over to the bar downstairs. You can walk up to the mezzanine and seat up there, which normally is our least busy area of the restaurant, the mid-level. Mm-hmm. And then the other option would be to continue on up to the roof deck. So you take your food up there, and there's a bar up there. So there is it's always moving. And particularly on this was a Friday night during Head of the Charles. But it's totally closed. So you can have literally in one moment 10 people coming upstairs, 10 people coming down the stairs. And we do everything we can to monitor it. But even with security at the front door and at the mezzanine, and all the bartenders are aware if they sense it, it's a challenge. But we have we've had numerous inspections since we had the violation last year, and we've always been in compliance. In this particular case, this moment in time, even though we were under capacity both on the first floor and up on the roof, at that moment in time, we were over capacity on our mezzanine.
Okay. I have no other questions.
Mr. Bubanek, when you took the count, did you estimate or did you physically count?
I physically counted all three floors.
Madam Chair, just again, the exits were clear. Did not appear to present any sort of fire safety issue. An issue where an employee was falling down on the job, so to speak, and there were only 12 people when you have an overall capacity of 268. The overcrowding would consider to be somewhat minimal. Not to minimize it either, but my client is taking measures to address it as far as additional security is concerned. And just the way that the restaurant is set up, there is going to be a lot of traffic. There are people going to be moving, and it's very difficult to make not only counts, but it's also difficult to regulate the flow of people through the premises. But again, my client is working on other systems as well, and I would submit that a warning with a violation warning similar to the previous two cases would be appropriate in this instance.
Mr. Brush, the exit egress for the people on the roof is through the second floor and down the first, correct?
There also is a fire escape off the back. So there's another means of egress, and that's off the back of the building in the fire escape. That same fire escape actually connects to the mezzanine. So the mezzanine actually has three means of egress, and it has the most means of egress of all three floors. It was not required to have a fire escape exit on the mezzanine, but we added that in just for an added level of security. So you can go down the stairs to the first floor from the mezzanine, you can go up to the roof, or you can go out the fire escape. So there actually are three means of egress on the mezzanine.
But the usual flow, good.
Yes.
But the usual flow from the first floor to the roof is from the first through the mezzanine, through those stairs, up to the roof, and then the same way down.
That's
correct.
Right?
There is not like a second staircase. You know, some places right. that have roof decks have that, you know, you come in one way
right.
and you leave the other. It's not like that.
Right.
But you
right.
do
yeah.
have the egresses, which
right.
is good.
Yes,
I just
I
wanted to...
Yes.
Okay.
I
Any other questions? Okay. This licensee, as Mr. Brush mentioned, does have... they had a violation, a couple of violations for overcrowding in 2017, where we gave them 6-day suspension, 4 to be served and 2 to be held in abeyance for a year. The year has since passed. We have not had another violation. I do remember how we came to these numbers because they changed because exactly the flow of this restaurant and the way the business runs. And based on that and the history, I would suggest a violation with a one-day suspension to be held in abeyance for 6 months.
I agree.
Okay, I would be more inclined because of the nature of the circumstances as counsel when Mr. Brush presented the violation with a warning.
And they took swift action and terminated their employee. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm missing your application.
I concur with your violation, one day held in abeyance.
Okay. So violation, one day held in abeyance for 6 months. If no violations occur in 6 months, it won't have to be served.
Okay.
You'll receive a statement of reasons. And then with a dissenting vote, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
(coughs) 1071 Cambridge Street LLC, doing business as BISC, 1071 Cambridge Street, license number 11495 for allegedly being over capacity on October 12th in violation of Mass General Laws Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64 and Board Rules 2.3, 2.5, 5.1, and 9. Raise your right hands, please. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Chief Commissioner Andrew Upton, UPTON. For the applicant, to my left is Keith Pooler, POOLER, owner. To my right, Sergio Garcia, GARCIA.
Thank you.
Andrea Boyer, BOYER, Investigator, City of Cambridge, License Commissioner.
Go ahead, Ms. Boyer.
Thank you very much. During a task force inspection on October 12, 2018, at approximately 9:28, we checked the BISC establishment, and when I counted the capacity, it showed that there were they have a capacity of 49 on premise for 60. There was 53 patrons and 7 employees. 7 of the employees were in the kitchen, and 3 were on the main floor. They
five been, and three?
I'm sorry, excuse me. 4 were in the kitchen, oh. 3 were serving customers on the main floor. Excuse me, 4 were in the kitchen, yeah, off of the main floor.
Okay.
So and 3 were serving customers. So.
Capacity is 49.
Correct.
But they had 53 and 7.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you. I spoke with Servio right away while everybody else was doing the rest of the task force inspection, and he worked with the customers and the staff and removed the people premised to be in compliance immediately.
Thank you.
I'd just like to let the board know that this is sort of a both an unfortunate and an ironic circumstance, because this restaurant has been in existence for a few years now, and they've had a very, very tough go of it. As the board knows, we came several months ago to realign some of the ownership structure as a result of the lawsuit, and just as they are getting on their feet, this was, Servio can tell you more, but this was probably one of the first nights ever that they had a decent crowd. You may have seen that they were recently named number 15 of Boston Magazine's top 50 restaurants. So we hope that that's a reflection on the increasing quality and service that they're getting. They've never had this type of problem before. And if it's okay with the board, I'd like Servio to just give you a little more detail about what happened that sure. night.
So on October 12th, there's pretty much, it was like Mr. Upton mentioned, it was one of the first busy days that we have of the season. After a really hard and slow summer. I was on the floor as a manager of duty. Whenever they come in, they notified me that we were over capacity. As I mentioned to Andrea and everybody else, and I have to be honest, it never occurred to me to count the people. That was my mistake, and I take full responsibility of it. It was just 7 p.m., busy night. We have three tables that come in with more people than we're supposed to be. There was a total, pretty much, they were sober over the capacity. I pointed out to them exactly which tables were those. After they informed me, I asked exactly what will be the procedure, what it would need me to do in order to come in compliance. Then immediately after that, I went and removed some more employees, as many as I could without hurting the business and hurting our guests. And then I had to go and ask another table, the patio six, to please leave the premises until somebody else or another table leave, and then invite it back to a restaurant. So that left, they went to have a drink, a restaurant close by, and after everybody, oh, the big party, it was a party of 17, it wasn't there, it was one of the tables that we have. Initially were 10 people. They were booked for a couple of weeks. They showed up with 17. It happened that we can put it together and serve them. Otherwise, we'll pretty much, you have a table for a couple of weeks, you go to trash, unfortunately, we won't be able to use it. We removed the 11 people they asked for us, and after they left, I stepped out of the building. Whenever they left, the first table left, I went back. And whenever the big table left, I was wanting by the six stop to come back and serve a dinner and, you know, do the best you can in order to get it back and, you know, hopefully they will get back to a restaurant.
And did you compensate these people for leaving?
Unfortunately, yes. I asked them where they left. Where they went and have a drink. I called them over there. We paid for the drinks, and when they come back, we had to comp the whole meal for it.
And about what was the value of the comping the whole meal? It's only for six people?
It was six people. The whole thing, it was probably close to $450, $500, something like that, which it was very much unfortunate. As you mentioned, it was ironic and bad luck, but I understand it is what it is. We have a capacity of 49 people, and we have to obey it. And it was a lesson learned for me, to be honest. It never occurred to me to count the people who come in at that moment. We were totally excited that we have a really busy night after being sober, totally slow, and having the place, you know, busy, and the atmosphere was fantastic, but it happens.
Counselor, do you know if their capacity is limited by a zoning issue?
We don't know.
It appears that they have a lot of space and standing room space, but they only have the 49.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not crowded in there, and we've actually had this discussion, and Keith has instructed the architect to take a look at the plans,
okay,
and talk to ISD to see if we can maybe configure this a little better now that we're number 15.
Yeah, we probably need it.
It'd be nice.
We definitely plan.
And you have a large bar as well. You have a bar
a
area,
bar.
But you have a bar,
yep,
area.
We have a bar area, which is there are two rooms. The bar is in the back, and the front dining room is in the front.
Okay.
So, we also changed some chairs, some tables, and that also is going to be part of the new plan in order to increase the capacity. It's definitely there's a space and there's no crowd, as you, Andrea, noticed that they.
And just for the record, they have taken some remedial measures, which include, correct me if I'm wrong, hiring additional door staff for busy nights, which is they've never had to do before. And you've got the clicker?
We have the clicker.
He has the clicker, so he can actually do the counting himself.
We have the clicker in Fridays and Saturday nights, so whenever we have more than 60 people on the books, that's when we bring a hostess to help us out the door.
And I will just say for the record, I think it was at one point during this that a member of the task force saw a candle on a table.
That's correct.
And they suggested that you extinguish it.
The person who, I remember his name, he was sitting here for the first hearing, pointed out to my attention, and he pointed out to us, we blew him off. So.
And you extinguished the candles, and there was no further discussion of any kind?
Not at all.
Just for the record.
We just put it out, and we just pretty much disposed of all of them.
All right. I will note for the record that they've been in operation since 2014, with no disciplinary issues. So, as with the other ones, I would suggest a violation warning.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Do you want me to put on the record that Phil Lenz was continued?
Yeah.
The disciplinary matter for the club Phelan's was continued.
This might have to be taken off the agenda for a little bit, pending criminal proceedings, but, yeah.
Clifton Blezel, New Hackney driver's license.
Sit down. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your name for the record?
It's Clifton Blezel, G-L-E-Z-I-L.
Thank you. And Mr. Blezel, have you been licensed to drive a taxi in any other jurisdiction? And why would you want to drive a taxi?
My dad has driven for most of my life, over 25 years. He's been able to take care of two kids, a house, and, you know, a few other things. So I have two kids of my own and a house. So I'm just trying to do the same.
Will you drive for your father then?
Yeah.
Okay. And I see that you have no issues in terms of a couple of moving violations, but nothing too bad. Officer Zito will meet with you and he'll give you the rules and regulations. And then good luck.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Officer Zito, is Tony not coming?
He had to go to work.
Okay, we'll give you this now so you can take it up and you can take Mr. Blezel upstairs if he wants to get his license now. Start helping out Dad.
Yeah, 12
is in here. He will be rescheduled to the December hearing. And then NSTAR, I see that. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry.
NSTAR at 161 Ale Life Coach Parkway. This will be for both matters 13 and 14. This is with regard to their flammable license number 14295 and 14296. If you could please stand up and raise your right hand.
For the testimony you're about to give, be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you. Could you please state and spell your name for the record?
My name is Rick, R-I-C-K, Schifoni, S-C-H-I-F-O-N-E.
Thank you. Ms. Lawyer, or Chief Lawyer, I'm sorry. Did Dana leave already?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, I needed to know whether he resolved this with Ms.
Ms. Duffy?
Duffy, yes. Yeah. I know that him and Ms. Duffy were working on this issue.
Okay.
Do you know what the status is?
Yeah, we were talking to Brian on the phone this afternoon about the permitting, and what's happening is we did pay the fire one back on August 1st, but the application wasn't filled out completely with a lot of the list of what kind of flammables are held at that station. And I think that's hanging up. I guess we have to pay then the... Jackie's job was always just to pay the the $12.40 and the $240 permits for the licensing every year, not to fill in, should provide the insurance certificates. This other one, I'm not sure it's another part of our organization that actually lists, because she doesn't have the information of exactly which kind of flammables Brian was looking for on that permit. So we had all kinds of blanks down the permit on there. So,
Brian Collymore.
Yes, Brian's the one we had talked to over. This was about 1:30 this afternoon. She had talked to him. She was actually out yesterday and the day before, but she talked to them like last week. So, according to Brian, we did put a payment in on August 1st for that permit, but the permit is still incomplete. Then he tried to walk her through paying the actual license permit, but when she brings it up on the screen, it just has that little circle that just keeps going around in circles saying that it's processing, but it never actually processed. So we weren't able to get to the next step to actually pay the second part of the permitting. Plus, we still owe Brian the information for his flammable list on there. So I'll have our stations folks, that the people that actually work there, get us a list of what it is. And I got to find out internally from our company who does that. Because I don't know if it was done in the past, because Jackie's job was, we got an insurance certificate and paid the two fees and it took care of it, and it was all done with a check.
Well, the reason the flammables material permit's not complete is because we found out this year that you weren't getting it. So that's a big issue. You were paying the license fee, but you weren't getting the flammables material permit.
That would explain why none of it was ever filled out.
But this has been going on since March.
Yes, so and every time she thinks she's done. She thought she got what got processed in.
I feel like a dentist with you guys. I really do. It's unbelievable. I mean, it is, quite frankly, I think it is ridiculous that I have to call Eversource in for a disciplinary hearing for an administrative matter that I know it's a royal pain, but they have to do it. And if it's not Jackie who complains to the staff about having to do this 24/7, then get someone.
It's her job. It's in her job spec.
You know,
it's her job to pay this.
Like,
now the additional information.
And I know that last week, I mean, and this is why I wanted to see, I didn't realize the time, otherwise I would have popped up during our break and asked Dana. But I know that last week, Colemore was out the days that Ms. Duffy was able to come in or do it or whatever. I get all of that. I know that there have been challenges with regard to that. But again, since March, it's ridiculous.
Agreed.
Do you guys have any questions?
By the time you get a result, it's going to be time to do the renewal for next year.
Should be fresh in our mind.
It will be done quickly.
I apologize for the delay. That's all I can really tell you. It's like every other organization, we're all swamped. You know, we try, and then it gets put on a back burner, and then somebody says, why haven't you done it? And it gets brought back up to the front, and we have to relearn. It's not excuses, it's just facts.
Yeah, and I do know that all you have in both of these locations are flammable. Because I physically went to both locations when we were trying to figure out who they belong to when we couldn't figure this out in March. So.
Yeah, her first thing was the addresses didn't match up, but that's irrelevant. It's, you know, to put it.
Well, that's how. Yeah, I think that's how the assessing office has them. They are weird addresses.
Well, I know we're running into the same thing on paying for the pole and conduit fees, too, because a lot of the jobs that we're doing are new construction, and they'll have an address that doesn't even show up in the assessor's map, and we just pick something close by, or pick up a parcel number, or pick up what it should be. You know, you can make it happen until we get some of the bugs worked out with doing stuff online.
And the circle thingy that you're talking about of the system, I had not heard of that. Was that happening today?
That was happening today when we were on the phone with Brian, and it's when you...
No, I know what it is. The issue came up with renewals as well, but I didn't know that these records were having the issue.
The only time I saw it was today.
Okay.
I did the payment with one of the other clerks for the pole and conduits for the November 15th, and they went through. We did have a couple that come up, but then you had to just shut it back down, and it would come back, give it another try, and it wouldn't come. It would get through. It seemed to me when I'd get a notice by email saying that you owe a fee, and we click that link, it would go in. But if we went directly into the website then and then tried to click on the next one, it wouldn't pay it. I don't know if there was some...
I'll talk to IT about it. I'll also have, who should Dana reach out to tomorrow? Still Jackie?
Still Jackie.
Dana reach out to Jackie. With regard to both of these, I would suggest a violation on both, and I would suggest a $100 administrative late fee for both. So a $200 total.
Okay. I can pay that now.
We still have a lot, and as I can see, my staff all left, but I'll send you an email tomorrow. We'll add it to the record.
Add it to the record is fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will talk to IT about what you just discussed about the circle thingy to make sure that it's not that your record's corrupted.
Okay, and I do have to do a little legwork internally now on getting Brian the information for the actual fire permit. And I don't think that's Jackie's job to do. I think it's somebody else in EverSource.
I don't want to speak for the fire department, but I can tell you that in situations where there has been something similar in terms of people not knowing exactly what they have, they set up a meeting with the fire department. The fire department physically goes to the location and they write down what you have.
But we have an environmental group that takes care of that.
I was going to say, you have an in-house environmental
that's what I mean. We're just going to get it to them.
That inventory,
my understanding from Brian is there was another location that Tim McGonigal from our environmental people gave him the information of it. So I got to figure out how is he paying his and Jackie not paying hers, or he should just do them all. That's internal to my group.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Administrative matters. Richard Cambriello, Daddy's Bonetown Burgers, applied for an annual Hawker Peddler license at 1 Alewife to peddle Mondays from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Granted.
Short Gregory is notified the license has surrendered their common victual all alcohol license, number 11997 Bennett Street Eatery.
Board acknowledges license canceled, filed closed.
Joe Toomey, on behalf of Walsh Brothers, has applied for a special noise variance on November 17th from 12 a.m. to 9 a.m., 6 p.m. to 9 a.m., and on November 18th from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. at 189 Vassar for a tower crane installation.
I think it also changed on November 17th through 18th from 12 a.m. to 11 p.m. I would vote to grant with the condition that a Sunday work permit is necessary.
Matt Burnham, on behalf of McCourt Construction, has applied for a special noise variance at 389 Binney on November 17th from 6:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. for a loader, excavator, generator, and pumps.
Granted.
Discussion of whether alcohol licensees should be given a grace period to complete their renewal applications.
I would vote a no on this because per Chapter 138, Section 60, A, it is clear that the renewal must be done in November. November 30th at noon is the last hour of our business day. So I would say that that is the day that all renewal applications for alcohol have to be completed, which means with everything and all supporting documents, all signatures, all payments, and all supporting documents submitted.
I concur.
Okay, so no grace period.
Elliott Management Services, doing business as Paradise Cafe, has notified the License Commission that the establishment has closed, but they're actively pursuing new locations.
I would acknowledge and I would say that we would have an informational hearing for non-news around March.
Yes.
Attorney Douglas Clark, on behalf of Medallion Bank and Fresh Start Venture Capital Corp, has notified the License Commission that the following medallions will be offered at an auction sale on November 15th, 11 a.m.
If I can make a suggestion, Ms. Lynch just mentioned the medallion number.
That's
and reference.
That's what I
the,
was going to do.
Yep.
Medallion 135, 47, 150, 247, 155, 212, 219, 216, 194, 129, 157, 106, 137, 112, 229, 199, 237, 169, 179, 120, 18, 41, and 56.
Board acknowledges.
August Rodriguez, on behalf of the New England School of English, holder of lodging house license at 36 JFK Street, has applied for a change of manager to Matthew Russell.
Granted.
Renewal matters. Lamplighter Brewing Company at 284 Broadway, holder of malt license, has applied for a New Year's Eve extension.
From 1 a.m. to 2 no, 2-1 a.m., hold on. They have a midnight, they want a 1 a.m. closing. I would vote for Grant.
Puffy Do, doing business as Wits End, 1248 Cambridge Street, has applied for a New Year's Eve extension.
They have a 1 a.m. closing, they're applying for a 2 a.m. I would vote to Grant.
0912 Incorporated, doing business as Forage, 5 Prakey Circle, has applied for a New Year's Eve extension.
They have a 1 a.m. and they're requesting a 2 a.m. granted.
One Days, Cameron Carter, for an entertainment license, 52 Oxford Street on November 17th from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. for a party, 6:50 expected.
Granted, police detail required.
John Robert Bagley has applied for a malt with entertainment license at 1 Oxford on November 17th from 8 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. for a party with 5,000 expected.
Granted, with a 10 p.m. closing for HUPD letter and police detail required.
Paul Clark has applied for a malt with entertainment license at Forest City, 64 Sydney, on December 2nd from 10 a.m. to noon for a road race.
Granted, police detail required.
Jason Alves, an all alcohol with entertainment license at Cambridge Side, 100 Cambridge Side Place on November 18th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the 10K with 3,000 expected.
Granted, police detail required and the condition that there must be a limited number of alcoholic drinks, 3 associated with the admission price, otherwise and thereafter the alcohol must be sold.
Alexander Vlachkovic, on behalf of St. Sava, has applied for a malt and wine with entertainment license, 41 Alewife Brook Parkway, November 17th from 8 p.m. to midnight for a fundraiser dinner.
Granted with the condition of limited number of drinks, 4 associated with the admission price, otherwise and thereafter alcohol must be sold.
Ed O'Connor has applied for a malt with entertainment license at Pro Park, 41 Church Street, December 9th from 5 a.m. to 3 p.m. for a road race.
Granted with the following conditions, police detail required, no alcohol can be served prior to 8 a.m. and a limited number of alcoholic drinks, 3 associated with the admission price, otherwise and thereafter the alcohol must be sold.
Kristen Healy for a malt and wine with entertainment license at the Sinesta on December 15th from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. for a holiday party.
Granted.
Manish Gupta has applied for an all-alcohol with entertainment license at the Masonic Temple on November 11th from 11:30 to 4:30 for a birthday party.
Granted with amended hours of 12 to 4 per permission letter.
Kosuke Yoshinaga has applied for an entertainment license at MIT Morse Hall on November 14th from 5 to 8 p.m. for a party.
Okay. I want to mention that I think this one might also relate to number 38. Even though the times, the dates are different and the times, it's for the same, 34 and 38. It's for the same event, and 34 is asking for entertainment. 38 is asking for the alcohol. I think there was a mix-up. We reached out.
But it's two different addresses.
But it's just, you have to look at the MIT stuff. Like, it's exactly the same thing. So we reached out to them to figure out if they're the same thing. I just want to mention that if they are the same thing, that I have no issue as to whether or not it's on the 14th or the 16th, or whether it's at the museum or at the Morse Hall. But I just wanted to mention that because we reached out to both MIT and the applicants just to confirm. Okay. The event is happening multiple days.
Okay.
So I'm just not quite sure, but I just wanted to mention that for the record. But as applied, this one, I would vote to grant.
And Cara and Dana are aware of that it might be?
Yeah, no, it's in the follow-up list that was sent to them. It's just we haven't heard back from them.
Inara Shiraz has applied for a Hawker Peddler license for 10 vendors at 59 Shepherd Street on November 9th from 8 to 11 p.m.
Granted.
Lauren Schechnader has applied for an entertainment license at MIT, 84 Mass Ave on November 9th through 11th, and the 15th through the 17th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the 11th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. and on the 11th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for a show.
Granted.
Jesse Chorofsky on behalf of Cultural Survival has applied for a Hawker Pedler license, 50 vendors at Cambridge Wrench and Latin on December 15th and 16th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. for arts and crafts.
Granted.
Jeffrey Fitzgerald at the MIT Museum on November 16th from 6 to 10 p.m. for a party.
I would, again, just mention granted with the condition of police detail required, and also if it is not the same as number 34, then I would just make sure that if they realize that they need entertainment, that we'd grant the entertainment as well now, since this event was going to happen before our next meeting.
Yu Kyung Lee has applied for a Hawker Peddler license at 3 Oxford Street, November 11th from 3 to 5 p.m. for t-shirts and wallet sleeves.
Granted.
Joyce Siak has applied for an entertainment license at 58 Plimpton, November 9th from 7 to 11 p.m. for a cultural celebration.
Granted.
Benjamin Palmer has applied for an entertainment license.
Oh, wait, sorry, Joyce. I would just say the with amended hours of 7:30 to 10 per HUPD.
Benjamin Palmer has applied for an entertainment license at 14 Harvard Yard on November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. for a concert.
Granted.
Kaya Lapitan applied for an entertainment license at the Masonic Temple on March 16th from 1 to 5 p.m. for a group dance lesson.
Granted.
Layla Tokir has applied for an entertainment license at 59 Shepherd, November 9th from 6 to 11 p.m. for a cultural festival.
Granted, police detail required.
Maura Dower has applied for a malt and wine with entertainment license at Studio 550 on November 9th from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. and November 10th from 7 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. for a concert.
Granted.
Peter DeVito has applied for a wine license to be exercised at 100 Cambridge Side Place on December 4th and 5th from 5:30 to 7:30 for a concierge event.
I know that we got the clarification that we needed, but just for the record, I would like to say granted with alcohol cannot be donated and an event needs to be closed to the public.
Items added after posting. Juan Sho Rao on behalf of MIT Asian American Association, entertainment license on November 16th from 7 to 10 p.m. for a banquet.
Granted with amended hours of 8 to 10 for MIT registration.
Marianne Moroni on behalf of Pemberton Farms has applied for one day wine and malt on November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. for a tasting event.
Granted with the clarification that it is not an open bar.
They have a package store license.
Yeah.
And that's in their shop, and this is in the greenhouse. Jamie Kalstead, on behalf of Gallery 23, has applied for a one day wine and malt and entertainment license for a concert.
Granted.
Johnny Powell, on behalf of Harvard College Black Man's Forum, has applied for a one day entertainment license on November 17th from 9:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Northwest Labs.
This one, once submitted, didn't have the registration yet, so I would grant, provided no contradiction, letter of permission. Yeah, so that's what we're missing. But again, that's happening before our other stuff. Just a second call to JH Restaurant, John Harvard's Brewhouse, second call being at 5:32 p.m. and no show, so no action. That's it.